This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
You've been in a Formula One car, obviously, with Fernando and doing the ride swap. When are you going to get in an Indy car?
I don't know. We'll see. I know that this oval is probably not going to happen for me ever. That opportunity is past for me. But I grew up watching Indy cars, and someday down the road, I'd love to have a chance to race in a road course event or something like that. But, you know, top of mind for me is my NASCAR program, and I'm just really enjoying today. I'll always watch on television and say, man, I should go. And just made it happen today, and I'm here.
See him getting airborne right here, so let's pause it right here. So you notice these two little holes right here in the underside of the body. That was originally enclosed on the old body kit of this current Indy car and basically created a huge surface area underneath the car that would essentially make it take off. But these little pockets right here help take off some of that pressure that's generated on the car and essentially removes the risk of them going airborne quite so much.
I've just been not struggling, but it's been a little bit harder to run behind cars. It's been a lot harder than what I expected it to be. You know, running there with Elio and right when I was behind him, I thought the grip was there, but you know, suddenly you're going so fast, everything just happens quicker than a blink of an eye. So the next thing I know, I'm already sideways, so I'm getting my hands off the steering wheel and, you know, slamming the wall. And then I see the floor, so I think I got like sideways or something. But the good thing is that I'm okay. The car kept me very safe, and I know I have a great bunch of guys that are going to be working really hard to get us back on track.
I'm feeling all right. We're getting there. I'm getting pretty tired already during this month of May. I think it's easier as a driver. Yeah, it'd be done than going straight for the track for about 10:30, 11, and then trying to help out the four cars that we have here this month and try to find some speed. So they're long days. Yeah, the squats, it's not it's more of a balance act. You know, I mean, for sure I need to work a lot of muscles and try to get all that going. But the biggest thing is just getting my balance back as well. So basically, I can try to get three squats in before I kind of lose my balance and have to reset.
Hello and welcome. It's Trackside, 107.5, 1070 The Fan. Thanks for joining us from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Some highlights and sound bites courtesy of NBCSN recapping day number, let's see, they're starting to run together. Day number three at the world's greatest race course that was cut short by about an hour and a half or so because of really heavy rain. So we heard from some of the particulars today, like Patricio Ward, who had a heavy crash today. Jimmy Johnson was a visitor here today at the race course, and some other stuff as well. I'm Kevin Lee. We may hear from Kurt Cavan in a little bit, but you know what? We're kind of doing it on the fly as we move forward. And I tweeted a picture of this today. We're on network television this month, and the better accommodations come along with that. And because it was raining for a little while, I've taken cover back in the plush NBC quote talents trailer, and Lee Diffie is here set to call his first Indianapolis 500. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I like this setup that we have here. I assume this trailer will be with us in Mid-Ohio, right?
I certainly hope so, but this couch that we're sitting on, Kev, we better not show Paul Tracy this. He'll be here having a big old bear nap, a big old afternoon power nap if he gets his eyes on it. But yeah, certainly very nice for the month of May.
And there's a spare couch over there for Paul, and I'm sure you'll see Townsend tweet a picture of him at some point. So you just got in here today. How excited are you? Is it starting to feel a little bit more real? You were here this last weekend, but it's a different feel as you come back getting set to race on the oval.
It is a very different feel. And, you know, I went home to be a dad and a husband for a few days, but was tuned in on Gold, on NBC Sports Gold, listening and watching you guys. And, you know, even just from 2 days separation from, you know, that awesome race on Saturday to, you know, you guys tuning in on Tuesday was just fantastic to watch. And even as a viewer, you could have that different feel. But I think, you know, for us, for NBC, but also just for the 2019 month of May, couldn't ask for it to get off to a better start with that thrilling victory by Pagenaud in the Indy GP. And, you know, Penske showed some good speed already so far in these practice days. And, yeah, I treated myself today with one of the production assistants while I had the time, because now every day, you know, from here on, I'll be busy like you've been. And so we jumped in a golf cart and went outside turn one and just, you know, watched some of the cars come through there as close to the fence as we could. And boy, oh boy, if that doesn't get the racing juices flowing, nothing will. That was awesome. And it had been a long, long time since I'd done that. And, you know, a lot of people think that we have a special view, which we do. But, you know, ultimately, it's all about experience, having that visceral experience, being out there right up against the fence, seeing the true speed, hearing the cars. And yeah, that got me right in the mood quick, fast, real fast.
And that's a good point. We do get spoiled by our access, but I think it's important for us on occasion to experience what the fan does. And the fan actually has a perspective that in many ways I enjoy more every once in a while, especially at oval tracks. You get up high somewhere at Pocono and you see what it looks like, or at Iowa Speedway, there are great vantage points. And I still haven't had a chance to do it because I've been in the booth most of the time so far this week. But every year I walk to the end of pit lane as far down as I can towards turn number one. And the last few years it's been the first oval of the year, and I am awed by the speed, because I've only seen the cars that year on road courses. I'm awed by the speed as they blow by me headed down to turn one.
Yeah, it's incredible. And the more we can do that, I think we should make more opportunities for ourselves to do that, just to experience it. But, you know, I think it's important for us as broadcasters and communicators just never to forget about those things, the nuances and the experiences and the sounds and the smells, etc., so we can bring that across in our broadcasts. I remember back in 2012, the year before I joined NBC, but I knew that I was coming to NBC. I drove here to the Speedway with my father-in-law, who was over from Australia. I did a road trip, and I sat in the stands as a fan, which I am, first and foremost. I'll always be a fan before I'm a broadcaster. And I wanted to, because I knew that I was going to be commentating IndyCar, and I wanted to take it in as a fan. And the Speedway, I had no idea that I'd be calling the Indy 500 one day. But to take that in from the fan's perspective, to me, is so important.
We'll talk more about the broadcast maybe in a little bit, but I want to talk about the day and what you've seen. You've been watching at home, texting me back and forth on NBC Sports Gold, and then here today you had a chance to get out and visit with some people. What are your impressions? What are your takeaways from the first 3 days?
Well, just the most recent one today, I just happened to bump into Patrizio O'Ward after he was released from the infield medical center, and his eyes were a little larger than normal. Mm-hmm. And he felt very fortunate to escape from that and not to flip. And he said to me, "Hey, am I the first one to kind of go up, you know, almost upside down in this new aero configuration?" And I said, "To my memory, you are, yes."
Congratulations.
And I said, "Thank goodness you didn't flip." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "That was wild." And he said that, "I was told there's two types of drivers here at the Speedway, those who have hit the wall and those who haven't." And he said, "Guess what? Now I'm the second. Sorry, I'm the first. I have hit the wall now." So I've got that out of the way, and I just think he was still a little bit buzzed by it all. He said his hands hurt. Strangely, he said the tops of his hands hurt, and they must have flung around somewhere in that pretty, that very aggressive and heavy impact. So that was something to remember. I'm not enjoying watching the struggles of McLaren. Is it a story? Yes, it's a story. It's a huge story, but I'm not enjoying seeing that. You know, it's two totally different experiences for Fernando Alonso coming with, you know, the established team in Andretti Autosport 2 years ago to doing for Zak Brown and McLaren and everybody they've gathered here in the US to do it on their own. It's such a different experience. And, you know, I kind of feel like we haven't got to see Fernando run mm-hmm. at Fernando's full level. So that's, you know, for everything that I've enjoyed, I'm not enjoying seeing that just yet. Felix Rosenqvist was so lucky yesterday to get away with that one, and Will Power. So I think there's been some, if you want to put it under a theme or an umbrella, there's been multiple lucky escapes. I've been super impressed with all three cars from Ed Carpenter Racing, and for the Ed Jones side of it, Ed Carpenter Racing with Scuderia Corsa, because Spencer Pigot has been super consistent. Ed's been good. You know, even though he was quick on the first day with a toe, he kind of downplayed that. But just right across the board, that team has been together, looks put together, and is delivering the results, as we saw today with Ed Jones. boy, oh boy, where do we stop? Could just keep going through the field. I think there's a lot to chew on in that. If I would ask you to put $10 down or $20 down, and I had to, and you know our whole TV crew, I'm not sure how confident you would be to put your money on someone to say, righto, that's the guy who's going to be on pole, or that's the guy who's going to win the race.
I still have a pick. I don't have my stat sheet in front of me. How many poles has Will Power won? He's not won one here.
Yeah.
I think he's going to win one on Sunday here.
What is he? He's 57? 56, 57?
It's in the 50s.
Something like that, 56, 57. I mean, when you see the amount of poles that Ed Carpenter and Scott Dixon have got, three each here, right? So Elio's got four. It's crazy not to think that Power... and, you know, fellow Aussie and former Penske teammate Ryan Briscoe, you know, had a pole here. Mm-hmm. So really unusual. That's a great point not to see Will get one. So, I think it's going to be, you know what I think? I think it's going to just stay in step with the theme of this year. Five different winners from five races. There's been a lot of unpredictability. Nobody, I don't care who you are, nobody would have predicted Pagenaud to win the way that he did last weekend. And after that call, and that he was annoyed with, and given his form of more than a year. So did anyone predict Sato to dominate the way that he did earlier this year? I don't know. There's so many variables in this 2019 season that I think, and I actually hope, it continues throughout the month of May.
So the big teams and the fast guys all think we're going to be in the fast nine and competing for the front three rows, but let's just do some math. There are... count with me, because I went to Ball State. Math is a challenge. There are four Penske's.
Yeah.
There are essentially six Andretti Autosport cars, right? When you count Colton Herta, adding on Connor Daly.
Yeah, so we're at 10.
There are two Ganassis. Yeah. There are three Ed Carpenter Racing cars that are super fast. We haven't seen the speed so far for Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan, but we thought adding Al McDonald, who was the engineer for the pole sitter last year, that they could be a factor. Who else am I forgetting at this point? So already you're up past 15 or 16. Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports might think they could have something. Remember, Hinch won the pole with them a few years ago. Oh, Sebastian Bourdais, who was on his way to probably winning the pole before he crashed 2 years ago, and they have been relatively quick.
He's been consistent, yeah.
You can get to 15, 16, 17 pretty easily that you think... yeah, that wouldn't shock me if they qualified in the front couple of rows.
Not at all. And, you know, going back to what I just said and picking up on what you just said, of that theme of unpredictability and who's in and who's out, just look at, and I know we're not comparing apples to apples, just look at last weekend's Indy GP. What a mixed up grid. What a mixed up fast six, you know, Firestone fast six. So I think by the time we get to Sunday, by the way, I know you are too. I am super excited about Sunday. Not discounting any of the other days, but to have that legit bump, to have that top and tail. Mm-hmm. Who's gonna make that fast nine, and then how will that shake up? But then you know there's equal interest at the back too. Like who's gonna make it and who isn't based on last year. I think there's a lot to look forward to. Another practice day yet, right? With Fast Friday, but I think there's a lot to look forward to.
And it's going to be very bittersweet as well, because we remember the emotions last year of Pippa Mann and James Hinchcliffe when they didn't make it. There are going to be three really pretty competent teams that aren't going to make it. You know, we can look at who are the most obvious candidates coming in to the week, and that's a brand new team, brand new oval driver in Ben Hanley with Drag and Speed, a new team, Kloss and Marshall with Pippa Mann. And, you know, unfortunately for Fernando Alonso, if you have to pick a third right now, you know, many would have said Kyle Kaiser and Junco's coming in, but they have again showed speed. I don't know if he's a top candidate right now. It might be Fernando Alonso just because they're so far behind.
Just that lack of track time has been mind-blowing. And with every hour, not even that, every 15-minute block, every bit of time that passes them by, Fernando is such an intense competitor. He knows what it means to have time on track here. And the window, the walls are closing in on Fernando and the McLaren organization to get that car on track for some decent track time. So, do you put him in that drop zone? Do you put him in that danger zone? I mean, it almost feels stupid to say that, but based on the practice days thus far, you have to, because forget the crash, put that aside. What about those electrical gremlins that just won't go away? And so, you know, Gilles de Ferran has spoken about they're trying to get to the bottom of it. They're trying to resolve it. Everybody's doing their best. They've got some very capable staff on that team. But he's just had a severe lack of track time. And there is no, as everybody who's an Indy 500 fan and an IndyCar fan knows, that there's no substitute for track time here, because of the varying temperatures, because of, you know, like, so tomorrow, track's not going to have anywhere near the rubber it had on it today after this massive thunderstorm and high winds and little bits of hail. I didn't see any hail, but there was hail predicted. You know, the track's going to be completely different together again tomorrow. So, you know, I don't know. Tomorrow, in my opinion, tomorrow is a pivotal day for Alonso. I think tomorrow is a make or break day, to be honest. If he has another bad day, Going into the first day of qualifying is not going to be a great feeling for him.
It's going to be fascinating, and we'll watch it unfold on NBC Sports Gold tomorrow. The entire crew will be with us. The A-team is back. Diff will be in the booth most of the day, along with Paul Tracy and Townsend Bell. I'll be on pit road and spelling Diff for a little while up in the booth, along with Marty and Kelly and Jan on pit road tomorrow. So the coolest part of today was that I spent 45 minutes with Robert Wickens, who came up into the booth, and I think this is the most in-depth conversation that he's had a chance to have, unedited, about what he's gone through. So that's available. It's archived on NBC Sports Gold, so if you have it, it was from about 2:45, 2:50, until about 3:40 or so. So you can go back and look for that. And then, Diff, you're doing something very cool, in association with Racing Mugs. Tell us about the sticker that you have with the proceeds going to support Robbie's rehab.
Well, look, as everybody knows, those rehab and recovery bills are enormous. And I just felt compelled to do something, no matter how little or how large. He's just such a great guy. And he had an impact on all of us, right? Mm-hmm. We were instantly drawn to him. And the way that he came into IndyCar with just his lovely laid-back style, but you put the helmet on it, it's a different guy. And we all thoroughly enjoyed covering him, you know, getting to know him better. And then, of course, we were all involved, you know, that day in Pocono. And so, as a lot of your listeners know, I have a catchphrase, which is, it's time to bring the action. Sometimes I say it at the beginning of the race, or I'll say it at some stage in the race. And I mean, yeah, it's time to ramp it up. Here we go. Time to bring the action. And I thought, well, you know what? It's time to bring the action. It's time to bring the action for raising funds, some funds for Robbie. And so I got a decal made up. Folks at Racing Mugs are selling it for me. And with the goal of raising $10,000 for Robert. So 2,000 stickers made up. $5 per sticker will go to him. And I'm pleased to say that within the first 24 hours, we've already sold 500 of those stickers.
Nice.
So we're on track to, you know, reach our target, which would be great. And for me to be able to go and get a bank check for $10,000 and give it to him, and to, you know, he's had to make modifications to his house here in Indy, to whatever bill may be there, you know, is it going to cover all the bills? Of course it's not, but it's something. And I just feel, you know, like contributing. He's such a good guy. And, you know, have a little bit of fun with, and I say this, have a little bit of fun with the racing fans, because they've been writing to me on social media and saying, thank you, great idea, this mm-hmm. is cool, I'm going to put one on my Spec Miata, I'm going to put one on my whatever, put it on your computer, just let's do something for a good cause.
I'm either going to put one on Jackson's go-kart or maybe both. I think we can put some sponsorship stickers on his race car. I think we've worked that out for the Lucas Oil Formula Car Series. We may see that at VIR in just a couple of weeks. Hey, tomorrow evening here in Indianapolis, you're going to be hosting an event with the great Mario Andretti at what most of us know is the Indianapolis Art Museum, the Newfields. You'll be there doing a Q&A with Mario?
Yeah, going to have a brief chat with Mario before there is a special screening of Drive Like Andretti. I know that many of you listening will have seen that already. When did it come out?
Saturday.
11. Saturday. It was right before we came on the air, wasn't it? Of course. And if you haven't seen it, it's unreal. It goes well beyond a racing story, and it goes well beyond the chronological storytelling of Mario's career. It's about Mario's life, which you know, it goes hand in hand with his career, of course, but sometimes that personal side and his personal journey outweighs and certainly is equal to, or you know, even more impressive than the professional career. But certainly there's elements to it that Mario watches now that are very difficult to watch because of the passing of his wife. And but you know, Mario's Mario. I mean, I, you know, you see grown men and women shaking there while getting ready to meet him, and he has such an impact globally, and he is so special in the sports world, the racing world, and to us here in IndyCar, that if you can make it along to that special screening, we'll have a chat to Mario just briefly before it, I think for maybe 15 minutes or so. And we did this earlier in the year at South by Southwest in Austin at the Comcast house, and it went down really well. People loved getting up close and personal with Mario. So hope to see some of you there tomorrow night.
Tickets are free, but they want you to reserve tickets in advance while they last. So I retweeted it a couple of days ago. You can do a Google search for the Drive Like Andretti screening at the Newfields, I think it's called, in Indianapolis coming up tomorrow night. All right, Diff, we'll look forward to hearing you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for all your hard work this week, mate, because I know you had some brief breaks, but 7 hours a day with no commercial breaks, that's tough going, and you've done it for 3 days now, so well done. Thank you, and maybe a little bit of respite for you. We'll bring the rest of the lazy sods back, and I'd lump myself in that group. We got some respite, so it's time to go to work.
Well, you know the nickname that Marty and Kelly have for me when I'm assigned for filling an entire break on gold. It's Radio Kevin. So Radio Kevin came to use to fill a good 5-6 hours a day the last few days. All right, a chance for you now to go see IndyCar at Road America coming up in June. 2 weekend passes for June 20th to 23rd to see the stars of IndyCar at the Rev Group Grand Prix presented by AMR, a tribute to first responders. Youth age 16 and under get in free at Road America, and all active responders get in free with their ID. Tonight's question is, in what year was the C-Tech Manufacturing Motorplex built at Road America offering go-karting? 239-1070, 317-239-1070. Give your answer to Brad. We'll have the answer coming up in just a moment. I may wander back to the media center, or I may see who's in the trailer, or I may just chat amongst myself and answer some Twitter questions coming up in a moment. Stay with us. Trackside from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, 107.5 1070 The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
All right, I've decided to stay in the television compound because it's wet, and I don't want to walk back up to the media center, but I found other people I can chat with. But before we do that, we've got a winner for our trivia question. Brad will tweet it out in a few minutes for 2 weekend passes to see the Road America IndyCar race, June 20th to 23rd. The Rev Group Grand Prix presented by AMR, and tickets are available. And the answer to the question of what year was the C-Tech Manufacturing Motorplex built at Road America? That's the go-kart track. 1999 is the listed answer. So with me here in the compound, and they have been invited into the, quote, talent trailer, and we use talent in question marks.
I normally call it announcers instead of talent.
I think that's probably the right way to do it, and I think there's been some question about the talent in the talent trailer. That's Mike Wells. He will direct the Indianapolis 500 on NBC, and Terry Lingner, who we've heard before, he is the producer of IndyCar on NBC, and he has been a regular guest on the program. So Mike has been in the television business for a few years, and give us the 20-second synopsis of the highlights of your career, because you've done just about everything.
Well, I've just been very fortunate with what I do. I've really directed about every sport you can think of with the exception of baseball. So I'm just really blessed of what the people I'm working with, as well as what I get to do.
And in recent years, Mike has predominantly been doing NASCAR on NBC, and that's where you started working with Terry way back in the day on ESPN, and he's come back to join us on some of the IndyCar races this year, and you've done the Indianapolis 500 before in the World Feed, but this will be the first time directing the American telecast. How excited are you for that?
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's a huge challenge, and the World Feed is a lot different than the actual network feed, because the World Feed is I actually direct the race, but the network would take my feed of the race, and then they would add the announcers, and they would add graphics, and they would add the pit stops. So now I get to do the whole thing, and I can't wait.
And Terry has produced the Indy 500 before on network television. We'll do so again this year. So it all kind of became real last night when Rich O'Connor, our coordinating producer who produces the pre-race show and one of my many bosses at NBC, sent out the first look at the format that I'm sure it will change. And then you just go, oh, man, this is the big deal. And luckily for us, Rich does all the planning and you do the race itself where we can kind of freewheel. But from your perspective as the producer, you can't format the race. How do you prepare to produce the world's biggest race?
Well, I think, you know, you have to be a fan and you have to be passionate about the sport. You have to be able to turn on a dime. And, you know, that's really kind of my style. And unfortunately, Mike's been on the brunt end of that for a few decades with me. So, you know, I always think the best producing and the best telecasts are done when you can't format it, and as you say, and you respond to what's happening and have the instincts to do what's best for the telecast in that split second. So that's always suited me really, really well, and I wouldn't have it any other way, actually.
The biggest challenge, or one of them, that I think about first of producing a motor race is there are no timeouts. Okay, maybe a caution slows things down, but in motorsport, oftentimes a caution, the most important moment happens because of pit stops. How do you try to manage that and stay ahead of the business, which is airing the commercials, but try to cover as much action as you can?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were working on that actually at the Grand Prix. What we have to do, I think, for the network telecast is be economical with our time. And I think people will see this on the 26th, where we might actually do one quick replay, go to break, come back, and be in the position to do the pit stops. We're just going to have to feel that out. The current race director, Kyle Novak, is not real big at throwing yellows, and I appreciate that. He wants the racers to race, and there's nothing trumped up. There's no phony yellows, if you will, and it's going to be a bit of a challenge, but one I look forward to.
I find directing something that there's no chance I could ever do anything like that, and I think people have praised the pictures that they've seen on the NBC IndyCar telecasts over the last few years, and Mike and Roger Vincent are the guys that are responsible for that. Gary Clem was with us for many years, a Ball State guy, so you know Gary is a solid guy. So Mike, give us an idea of how you prepare and how you help, and Terry does it too, but you're orchestrating the chaos of how many cameras are you looking at in deciding what pictures you're going to choose?
Well, there's 100-plus cameras.
Only 100-plus?
Yeah, it depends on how you do the math, but we're probably around 116 to 120 cameras. So, but really, you can plan, like Terry and I both, we have a plan, but you have to let the race come to you. And then as the race comes to you, that dictates what the coverage is. So Terry's the coach. I'm the quarterback. Mm-hmm. So he plans the whole thing. I execute it. But at the same time, if he's got something planned and all of a sudden there's a battle for second or third or for the lead, all bets are off, and we transition to that and we do that, and then we go back to whatever the coach's plan is.
Do you make the call to switch the camera, or does Terry tell you first to make the call to switch?
Actually, it's a combination of both of us. If he sees it before I do, he would say something. But normally, because he's working directly with the announcers and actually, you know, doing the storylines, I pretty much watch what's going on the screens and then make the decision. That's a battle for a second. We're going to it now.
I've got the scanners for the teams in my ear. I have Terry in my ear, potentially Mike, our pit producer, Renee.
the race broadcast. That seems like plenty. Terry, how many different people are talking to you?
I was trying to think about that the other day. I just was asked about that. And, you know, I think there's probably a maximum of, well, there's going to be 13 announcers that can all kill their mics and get to me, plus the tape producer, plus the pit producer, plus the two graphics people, plus the executive producer. So, replay. It could be as many as 20. But you know what's really fun is just to process all that. It's so exciting to be able to try and figure that out. The one thing I did, what Mike was just saying, I think it's very important, is the director is completely, like the quarterback, should have all the presence to call audibles. Because, you know, there is a lot that I have to try and manage. I'm trying to make the television. Mike is in the moment. I'm trying to work ahead. And the teamwork that goes on, not only with you guys that are calling the race, but what goes on in the truck is really phenomenal. It takes a team, and everybody has a set of eyeballs and ears that want to help Mike and I tell the story, and we've got to process that in a split second to try and do our best job. And it's really kind of hard to visualize until you kind of see it, if you'd ever come in the truck. Actually, my wife Louise makes her nauseous. She hates it. She's like, "What the heck are you doing in there? You're just..." It seems like complete chaos, but there is a method to it, and it takes a lot of years to kind of perfect that.
So when I go to a sports bar and there are three or four or five or eight games on, that sometimes overwhelms me a bit. I don't totally enjoy that. And the truck is that times 20, with so many visuals and so many voices and so much yelling and screaming going on. I really think it'd make a cool digital piece for either NBC Sports Gold or NBCSports.com, just to kind of put a camera in there with a mic at some point for 5 or 10 minutes and just get people a sense of what's going on behind the scenes. Mike, what's harder, a road course, directing a road course or a street course race, or a big oval like Indianapolis?
Well, quite frankly, they both have their own personalities, so I don't know if one's more difficult than the other, quite frankly. The thing is, on an oval, unlike, now with that said, the Indianapolis 500 is like a road course.
Yeah.
Because you cannot see the whole track with any one camera unless you have a blimp or a chopper, and then you can't see it all, really. So really, it is a road course for all practical purposes. So, and like if you go to Texas, where you can see the whole track, but the cars are just so stupid fast on that, you know, I mean, it's insane. But that's a whole different mindset. But so with that said, I would say the Indy 500, not only because of the event itself, because it's a true event, but because it's a combination of an oval and a road course, it's really one of the toughest ones to cover.
And if we screw this one up, it's going to be seen for many, many, many years. Think about that. I remember thinking about that the first year I joined the radio network,
because
I've heard those highlights forever. And, if I screw this up, I'm going to have to hear it for the next 50 years.
You know what, though, people? I've always felt like this, and I learned this from Jim McKay. I'm dating myself here with the ABC telecast. I used to assist him. And all we can do is try our best. And if you have a flubba-dubba, and I'm being polite with what I'm saying here, if you screw something up, people, you know, you're human. We're all trying. It's live. There is no format. And, you know, it's the way you react to those kind of things that I think would endear the race fan or even a casual fan to watch us.
Do you know how many people are working on the telecast on race weekend? Do we have an idea yet? Somebody in PR will send that out eventually.
It's over a couple hundred for sure. Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's talk about racing. And both of you guys are race fans. Terry raced in the Rolex 24 and at Le Mans. What's going to happen this weekend? What do we expect to see?
For qualifying?
Yeah, let's start with qualifying before we get to the race.
You know, I'm feeling pretty good about Ed again. I just think every time we've interviewed him, he seems really, really confident, and he knows this so well. He wants it so bad. He came in second last year. So I'm thinking Ed.
Their cars look the best so far, and in the no-tow report as well. I just
told Diff a few minutes ago, I'm going with Will Power. How many 50-plus pulls he's won, but he's not won one here at this place. So I'm going with Power this week. Do you have a pick, Mike?
Well, I tend to go with Terry on Carpenter, because we were actually during the practice today, we were talking about him and how strong he is and how great he is on an oval. So you can't rule him out. However, Will is due. So, but I tend to go with Carpenter.
At the other side of things, what do you make of McLaren's travails here over the last few days, and what kind of serious trouble are they in right now?
You know, I have a theory about all this in even in our business, and you know, to be a professional, I don't think you should ever be able to just waltz right in. And I don't care if it's being a broadcaster, a director, producer, or a sports star. It always kind of offends me in a certain way, where people think they can just come in and be a broadcaster.
It's start like, at the top, yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Let's start at the top. Well, yeah. No, you can't. You've got to learn the nuances. You've got to learn your craft. And it's kind of refreshing, and I think everybody should take some solace with this. It's like, hey, McLaren, with all their pedigree and all their greatness, they should not be able to come in here and swipe this race. If they do, that's a great story. But in the same token, I don't mind them struggling a little bit. And you know, Alonso's been great. Let's face it, Zach Brown. I'm so glad they've joined us. But in the same token, if they didn't struggle a little bit, I'd be a little upset in a way. You know, you just shouldn't be able to come in and swipe this race. The same way with, you know, I don't think I could just practice for a couple of months and join and try and win the Masters, right? I mean,
you need at least a whole summer.
Yeah, at least a summer. Yeah. You know. And so the point being, it's just at a certain level, and this is at the highest level in our sport, you better earn it.
I really think this weekend we're going to have a lot of good stories to tell, and there are lot of teams to really root for. Tim Clawson and then Pippa Mann after not making the race last year. Let's face it, they're a bit of an underdog as a new team. Ben Hanley and Elton Julian with Dragon Speed, brand new team. They're not getting any technical support right now. Juncos and Kyle Kaiser, who, by the way, looks plenty fast, but still that's a blank race car right now. And the story of Ricardo coming to America with $400 in his pocket as a go-kart mechanic. And he's made the Indy 500 before, but these are all fantastic stories to tell.
And I'll throw another couple at you, is Dale Coyne. I mean, Santino Ferrucci is, again, we're getting to know him really well socially. He's always got a smile on his face. And then you, at the other end of the spectrum, you've got an unbelievable champion, one of the best that's ever driven, with Bourdais, Sebastian Bourdais, and I think they could be strong. I mean, Santino today was a little funky. They were doing something else, but boy, he's been really racy on the track. And again, I want people to know that these are the kind of people we get to see behind the scenes, and they're a pleasure. And Ferrucci is going to be a star in the league, I think.
It's good to chat with Terry Ligner. We've had before, and I've had it on my to-do list for a while to talk with Mike Wells, because I really think directing an auto race is one of the most interesting challenges out there. And Mike and Roger do it magnificently, and we get a lot of praise for the coverage. Sure. And I always say it's the people in the truck that make it work, that help us look good, and the pictures. If you don't have the pictures right, it doesn't really matter what you're saying. And Mike and Roger do a fantastic job of that, and we can't wait to see it all unfold, first in qualifying this weekend, and then for the world's greatest race coming up a week from Sunday on NBC and Channel 13 in Indianapolis. Still the tape delay in Indianapolis, but you can join us live around the country on NBC. And don't forget, 7 hours on NBC Sports Gold tomorrow from 11 until 6. All right, what we missed and more coming up in just a moment. And Donald Davidson is coming up after 8 o'clock tonight with the talk of Gasoline Alley on 107.5, 1070 The Fan.
This is Elio Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kirk Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
All right, back at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and still time to chat before Donald Davidson is here in a little more than 10 minutes or so with Tony Donahue talking about the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We'll get into practice speeds and some other things and developments and tidbits in a moment. News off the track from today. So it was announced that Matt Damon and Christian Bale, Academy Award-winning actors, will serve as the honorary starters for the 500 and wave the green flag as well. And I'd forgotten about this. They're going to be in, I'd heard of the movie, I guess I never knew who was in it, but they're going to be in the movie Ford versus Ferrari that will be released in November that tells the story of the 1966 24 Hours of Le Mans. So very cool. That's some big star power. Matt Damon and Christian Bale here. Kelly Clarkson, I think it was yesterday, announced will do the national anthem. So I saw a couple of questions asking about pace car driver. I honestly don't know who that is at this point, and I'm pretty sure that has not been announced. So, you know, sometimes they have a target for that, and they're waiting for confirmation. And maybe they already know and have a confirmation, and are just waiting for the maximum publicity opportunity and time to do that and spread things out to some extent. So that's significant, and I think that's cool. On track today. All right, here's what we have, along with some other news and notes as I scroll back to practice times for the day. It was Ed Jones who was fastest on both the Noto reports and the overall speed report. So let's first look at what we've seen throughout the 3 days of practice. It's still Will Power and Simon Pagenaud at 229.7 done on, well, that was the end of day number one. That's the fastest so far. Newgarden yesterday, 228.856. Today was not quite as quick because for a lot of the time, drivers were trying to find space on the track to run by themselves without an aerodynamic aid. And then we might have seen some big speeds at the end of the day, but it got really dark at about 4:30 or so, and we knew the weather was coming, and then it started pouring a little bit after that, so the day was cut short, and there wasn't as much done today. About half as many laps as there was yesterday. 1,717 today, and Jones was the quickest at 227.843, followed by Takuma Sato, 226.699. Zach Veach was next, Sebastian Bourdais, Colton Herta, Sage Karam, Kyle Kaiser, Spencer Pigot, Scott Dixon, Simon Pagenaud. That's the top 10. We look at the other end. Santino Ferrucci was 35th on the chart today at 220.457 in 60 laps of work today. Felix Rosenquist, back after crashing yesterday in the backup car, did 41 laps, and tops was 221.697 for quite a while. 20-some laps in, his tops was around 217. Ben Hanley was third from the bottom, and we'll get to why there was 35 and 36, in case you don't know. 35 instead of 36. Hanley was 33rd quick today at 222.364. Tony Kanaan before that, 222.381. Mateus Lace before that, and so on and so forth. Now the speeds that matter for this weekend. It still doesn't tell us the whole story, because did you get a clean lap in qualifying? We're not, or in practice qualifying, I should say. You don't know on that front. Ed Jones, fastest overall and fastest in the no-toe report. No one within 7 seconds of him. Just a shade under 225, 224.957. So the trend is Ed Carpenter Racing cars are fast. Spencer Pigot, his teammate, second fastest on pure all-alone speed. Then Simon Pagenaud was next. Will Power after that. Then Charlie Kimball. Note a trend. Top five are Chevys. That's what we've seen so far throughout the week. So maybe they have an edge in qualifying. It still doesn't mean that they're going to win the race, or even the favorite to win the race. Which car handles the best in traffic? Which one can get through traffic better? Which one maybe saves more fuel and can do an extra lap or two that could work out in their favor? Six quick, fastest Honda was Marco Andretti. This is the no-toe report, all alone, 224.432, then Takuma Sato, then Ed Carpenter, then Joseph Newgarden, then Marcus Ericsson. Rossi was fastest yesterday by himself. He was 11th quick today. And looking at the bottom side of things, 35th was James Davison, 215.226, his best lap by himself today. Felix Rosenquist, 217.3. Patricio Award, 219.5. Sebastian Bourdais, 32nd, 220.2. He's been pretty good, though, in other times. I think they're going to have the speed. And Santino Ferrucci, his teammate, 31st. Servia, 30th. Now,
35 out today, still no Fernando Alonso all day for the McLaren. Maybe they would have gotten out before 6 o'clock, but that's kind of an example of the challenge and why people like me said coming into the month, it's not a foregone conclusion if three are going home that they at least won't be in the discussion at some point. When you're picking out teams that might have some difficulty, you're going to start with teams that don't have experience here before. And we saw some quotes in Bruce Martin's story on NBCSports.com from Bob Fernley running that program. And it's not only a point of pride, but it's really because they want to learn some things for the long term. They still have an aim of being full-time in IndyCar. There are some rumors that we might even see them in a race or two by the end of the season. His quote was essentially, it doesn't do us any good to just take someone else's setup. We want to do it ourselves. And they're doing it themselves, and they've had some electrical problems, and then now the big crash from Alonso yesterday at around 12:30, and some 27 hours later, they didn't have a car prepared. Where conversely, Chip Ganassi Racing crashes at 5 o'clock yesterday, and they fire up a car sometime this morning, and they were ready to go on track at 11 a.m. So that's the difference between a team that's been doing it a long time and a two-car team and a brand new operation. And I'm told that there weren't Carlin people in there working on the car. This is a McLaren effort. Maybe they have some information, but again, the story is it was logistical information. Most of the partnership with Carlin came before they even got to the track. McLaren is doing this on their own, and trust me, they're in peril. Because it's not easy to pick out. If you had to pick somebody that wasn't going to make it, okay, you can pick another new team, Dragon Speed, and Ben Hanley, who's never done an oval race, and the team's only done two IndyCar races, and they don't have any technical help. Maybe you would choose Clausen Marshall Racing and Pippa Mann, another brand new team this year. Now, they do have some help from AJ Foyt Racing, so I won't be that surprised if they make the race. So who's out? Kyle Kaiser and Junkos looks pretty good. Three are not going to make it. We know there's going to be a surprise. Somebody that really we're not expecting is going to be in trouble at some point on Saturday and maybe even not get there. And, you know, when you're talking about, we're talking about six now that are not going to be safe on Saturday. So six are going to have a one-shot winner-takes-all, essentially, for the best three out of six. It's going to be high drama. And as I mentioned to Diff and Terry, it's going to be a little bit sad at some point with the emotions because we know a dream is going to be crushed. A business could be in big jeopardy as well. It's big, big, heavy stuff. Also today, Patricio Ward crashes. Heavy crash. About the same place that Felix Rosenquist crashed yesterday. He's okay. He says his hands are a little bit sore, though. It was in turn two. They do have a car. They are, I believe, converting it from road course configuration. In fact, I'm very confident I read that and heard that throughout the day today. So no award the rest of the day. They will begin to prepare that tomorrow, the Carlin Racing crew, for rookie Patricio Award. So a lot of stuff happening today. And then tomorrow, Fast Friday, meaning they'll turn up the turbo, give them more horsepower, and you'll see more speeds. How much? You know, you're probably going to see a 230 tomorrow. Maybe even like a 231 when you talk about the draft factoring in. You'd love to see, teams would love to see the track all by themselves, half a track to themselves, but that's not the way it's going to be. It's tough to find space when there's somebody not on the straightaway with you, so you're going to get a little bit of a tow, and I think you'll see a 230 speed tomorrow. I feel very confident you'll see one on Saturday morning when it's cool. Depends a lot on the conditions tomorrow. How humid is it? How much warmer is it going to be? All of that kind of thing factors into what we're going to see tomorrow in the final practice, which is 11 until 6, the final long day of practice. But unlike some other years, there's still a decent chunk to come, 3 hours or nearly 3 hours on Sunday after qualifying, and then another two-hour session on Monday, and then a 90-minute session. That's what carb day is this year, an extra 90 minutes. Couple of other notes. I saw this. Who reported this yesterday? The Associated Press had this in the notes column yesterday, and I think this was good news for Elio Castroneves. Roger Penske confirmed that when Elio made his full-time switch to sports cars, Penske made a three-year commitment to Elio for the 500. Sure didn't seem like Elio knew about that three-year commitment last year after he crashed on television, pleading. Maybe he was joking. Maybe he was joking and just playing the drama. But it looked pretty real for a little while for Elio Castroneves. And Roger was a little bit coy until after Power won the race in the post-race press conference. So I'm happy to hear that Elio is going to have at least one more season. Michael Shank told Motorsport.com that their deal is up with Arrow SPM for their technical partnership after this year. It was a two-year agreement, but he's working on extending that into next year. And, you know, and something I forgot to mention yesterday doesn't affect the racing at all, but it's newsworthy because the parent company of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Holman & Company, has sold Clabber Girl, the corporation that started the family fortune for the Holman family in Terre Haute. They've sold it to B&G Foods, and Mark Miles, the CEO of Holman & Company, says this allows the company to now fully focus on the continued direction and growth of IndyCar. All right, out of time for tonight. Thanks to Mike Wells and Terry Lingner for joining us from NBC, the director and producer. I hope you enjoyed that. And our friend Lee Diffie as well, set to call his first Indianapolis 500. And he's back with us on the broadcast. Our full team is here tomorrow on NBC Sports Gold. And we'll be back tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on Trackside. Thanks to Brad Huber back in our studio. And up next, it's the talk of Gasoline Alley. Donald Davidson, Tony Donahue. It's next on 107.5 1070 The Fan.